is Northfield Outdoors, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. From hunting to hiking, camping to cooking, mushroom hunting to motorcycling, and so much more, your hosts, Dave Vesladol and Andy Beham, will enlighten, entertain, and inform you with a lively mix of guests and discussion on all things outdoors. And now your hosts, Dave and Andy.
Well, welcome to another edition of Northfield Outdoors on KYMN 95.1, The One, and 1080 AM. Northfield Outdoors is proud to be sponsored by Professional Pride Realty. I'm Dave Vesladol, and as always, sitting across from me, looking handsome and a little tan and rugged with his beard, is Andy Beham.
By tan, I'm assuming you mean the sunburn on my face.
Yes. It looks like you got out a little bit.
Yeah, we had a long, hot weekend, but it was nice. Every year, we take the girls up and head up to summer camp that I grew up going to and working at, and now the kids go to, and we volunteer our time along with about 100 other people to get the camp ready for the summer. And, you know, by the time the kids show up in 2 weeks, you won't realize everything that goes on behind the scenes, from splitting firewood for the whole summer to restringing the fishing rods and getting all the boats ready. And of course, I built an outhouse. I had to frame that up and get that ready to go. So everything's a necessity, I tell you.
They found your secret talent.
They did. But it is a beautiful outhouse.
Oh, luxurious.
Yes.
Okay, key question. Single holer or two holer?
I find the two holers a little awkward, so we just went for a spacious one.
Oh, so no romantic nights out.
No. Oh, wow. But no, it was a good weekend. It was definitely a hot one, but... Oh. We were about an hour north of Brainerd up near Leech Lake, and it was cooling off into the 50s at night and real comfortable to sit around a campfire. And so, yeah, it was a good weekend. Traffic was a little awful getting home yesterday.
Yeah, where isn't traffic bad?
Yeah, that's very true. So,
no kidding.
Yeah, it was a good weekend. How about you?
I went up and bet money on the horses. I went up to Canterbury.
So you're taking me out to dinner after this.
It better be McDonald's.
Oh, you bet on the horses. Didn't win on the horses.
Yeah,
okay.
I didn't do that bad, but let's put it this way. I came home with less than what I went with.
All right. But it was a hot one.
It was. But I will say this. Canterbury did a very nice memorial service for Memorial Day.
Okay.
And it was top-notch. They did that. But what a hot day.
Yeah.
We actually didn't spend much time outside. While we were there, we spent more time inside.
Yeah.
And the horses, man, as soon as they were done running them, they were spraying them down. They had hoses out there after every race.
Yeah, I saw an article today and everything that went into making sure the horses didn't overheat and, you know, keeping them cool before they run and spraying them down instantly afterwards. And yeah. I don't want to run that fast in 100-degree heat, I'll tell you that much.
No, thanks. Well, today, Andy, we've got a return guest, Mike Callery, back, and we are going to talk the art of fly fishing.
All right. That
sounds very sophisticated.
It does. It's an art.
It is an art form, actually.
Yes,
it is. Hey, welcome, Mike.
Thanks. Good to be back with both Dave and Andy here, so looking forward to it.
You know, when I think of fly fishing, I always think of the movie A River Runs Through It with Brad Pitt out in western Montana. Of course, I picture myself as having the Brad Pitt role out there.
That's how most people picture you.
Yeah, right. But it is something with fly fishing that I think gets in people's blood. I am not. I'll be the first to admit, and you can talk to my son. I am a lousy fly fisherman, and as he has stated many times, stick with spin casting. But I know, Mike, fly fishing is in your blood. And,
yes.
We've had a number of conversations. But let's start out with, give us fly fishing 101. What is fly fishing, and how does that compare to, like, spin casting, and kind of go from there. Let's just start there.
Well, I think the big difference is with spin casting and bass casting rods in that you're using the weight of the lure to cast, but with a fly rod, you're actually using the weight of the line to cast. So you're able to cast very small, tiny, very lightweight insect imitations, minnow imitations. You're able to make very, very delicate presentations. So that's kind of most of the gist of it.
So I don't want to say you have to be snobby to be a fly fisherman. When I watch people fly fishing, it's almost like an art form, more so than when I go with some of my other buddies fishing. We're more concerned with, you know, is it Coors Light or is it Michelob? But no, what is it about fly fishing that seems to get in people's blood, and they almost become a purist. Or maybe I'm not being fair there.
Well, and yeah, because I do think that there's you can get kind of as much into it as you want to. You really don't have to become a purist and, you know, find all the nitty-gritty details and everything like that, and even become an awesome caster. You know, on a lot of the streams and rivers that we're fishing, you're not trying to lay out a beautiful cast. You're actually trying to pile up some slack lines so the currents in the rivers or streams aren't going to mess with your presentation. So if you get into it and start to, you know, get accustomed to the aquatic insect life and the minnow life and everything like that that the stream offers, you can kind of get kind of as deep as you want to get into it and be as scientific or not. And you can just go out and have a really good time. It's everybody thinks it's very expensive, but it, you know, there's a lot of great equipment now that really isn't. And, you know, they're trying to get more and more people, kids, women and stuff into the field. And that's kind of become a lot of, you know, some of the Trout Unlimiteds and things like that. Kind of their goal is to make it more accessible to more and more people, because it seems as though a lot of those purists are getting to be elderly and kind of getting over that, being able to get out and actually wade the rivers and, sure, and do a lot of the fishing.
So before we want to get in and start talking about the equipment, but Andy, you also do some fly fishing.
I do. I wouldn't say I'm a fly fisherman, but I enjoy it. And as Mike was saying, it doesn't have to be that expensive. When my in-laws bought property that had a trout stream that ran through, I decided I wanted to get into it. And I want to say from waders down to a small kit of flies, I think I was into it less than $300 to be in the river fishing and ready to go. So it's definitely something that is affordable to do as a hobby.
Okay.
Myself, I don't consider myself to be very good and don't need high-end equipment that I can't get to do what it's designed to do. Yeah, and like Mike was saying, you know, I like to try and practice my casting, but for the most part, I just toss it out there and let the current do it for me.
I know when I go out to Western Montana where my son lives, and he's big into fly fishing, I get such a kick out of course watching him, but other people like you, Mike, when they're out fly fishing, it's looks like an art form. It's just looks like you've just become one with the river. I don't know if that's a fair statement or
well, it is. It's very relaxing. I agree. It can be, and that's kind of why I enjoy it. A lot of my friends like to go out in groups or with several people. I prefer to go alone and really just kind of not only fish, but also watch everything else that's happening around the stream, bird life, wildlife.
It seems like when I come across fly fishermen out fishing, they are alone. I see more people fly fishing alone, where if I go someplace else where people are spin casting or just throwing bait with their bobbers, they're usually there with a bunch of people. Is there something to be said about why a fly fisherman likes that peacefulness or solitude?
Well, I think part of it is the way that you're casting. So it's hard if you are going paired up with a friend, it's hard to both fish the same spot in the river just because of how, you know, you've got usually on average about 30 to 40 feet of line out and then 10 to 15 feet of tippet out. So you're throwing around a lot of line. So you can't be standing breast to breast and still cast and fish in a spot. So you're usually taking turns per each of the runs and each of the holes. You might kind of switch up, but otherwise I think that's kind of the big thing, is you just run out of room with your casting stroke.
Well, let's stick with some of the basics. Let's kind of go through what's the difference in equipment. Let's start with what's different about a rod.
Well, I mean, you can kind of run anywhere from a $20 fiberglass rod all the way up to several $1,000 bamboo rods. You know, most of the rods around here, the average weight is going to be a 5-weight rod, 8 to 9 feet long. We do have a lot of small streams around here, so some of those streams are, you know, you can get a little more, getting some specialized equipment, some real short rods and that for getting around some of these brushy areas and stuff like that, but you know, 9 foot 5 weight, I think, is a great place to start. You can throw dry flies, nymphs, streamers, so you can kind of do a little bit of everything that we do around here as far as fishing goes. So,
well, and how about for listeners that haven't really gotten into fly fishing, what is the difference in the reels compared to your basic spinning reel and what they're used to?
Well, a reel and a fly rod, especially for us around here, the reel is, you're really not playing any fish on the reel. So the reel is just there to hold the line. So you really don't need a super expensive disc drag reel, just a click and pull, something cheap, something that balances your outfit out nicely is just fine. You know, you get down into the salt water, or if you want to go after some of the pike and carp and things like that, you can get into very expensive and very nice reels with some sealed disc drags and that. But, you know, for average trout fishermen here, really, you don't need anything special. It's just there to hold the line.
Now, you talk about if you're going after some pikes and stuff. I think the classic idea that people have is you're going after trout. You're in a stream going after those trout with the fly floating on the top of the river. Are people out doing like some trophy fishing for some pikes and large fish that way, also fly fishing?
Yes, definitely. You know, we've got, we're close to the Zumbro River in here, which is a world-class smallie fishery. And so we've got smallmouth, largemouth, a lot of the small ponds around here that you can find a panfish in. I've caught channel cats on a fly rod, bullheads on a fly rod, crappies, and a lot of those, the panfish are great places to start, or if you want to bring kids out to have them start, they're always willing to take a fly. And carp is kind of overlooked, and I know out in Montana and stuff where your son is, Dave, that carp fishing is, they're extremely hard to catch on a fly, is getting to be more and more popular in a lot of these waters.
Yes, my son Derek told me about that. I got fly fishing for carp. Seriously? And he said, you get a huge carp on there that is so fun to pull them in.
Yes, and they
he said the only thing you can kind of compare it with, they have what's called some bull trout out there that get really large. He said those are extreme fighters, but he said, he mentioned that.
Yes, yeah, it's gotten to be real popular. And carp kind of have taste buds that kind of cover their entire heads. So when you're using a fly and you don't have anything that is going to trigger their olfactory, it's much harder. So your presentation, and you've got to be stocking them because they are extremely spooky fish.
So do you put some sort of scent or flavoring on the fly to try and help them along, or are you just really trying to visually trick them?
Usually just trying to visually trick them. I know there are some people that will use some vanilla and stuff like that on some of their flies.
Rub it on chicken liver? Or
right. But carp, for one, is one that's much, much easier to catch visually. So you need to find some pods of feeding fish and then sight fish for those.
And what about the line? Do you use a different type of a line on a fly fishing rod and reel?
Yes, so there's rod weights that are going to kind of dictate how big of a fly that one could cast. So they're going to usually start, for the most part around here, you're using a three weight, would be a real lightweight rod. A lot of fun and works perfectly fine for all the fish up here. And then you can go all the way up into 10, 11 weights, which are saltwater and some of the salmon and steelhead fishing that folks do around here. But you need to match your line with your rods. You want to be sure your rod is going to load properly. So if you've got a 5-weight rod, 90% of the time, I'm going to say 90% because some people will alter some of their lines if they're doing some specialized things, but you'd be using a 5-weight line and a 5-weight rod and a 4-weight line and a 4-weight rod and etc.
And what about leaders and tippets? When I think of a leader, I think of a little metal swivel that I put on my line to hook trolling bait onto. What's your definition of a leader when it comes to of fly fishing?
Well, your actual fly fishing line is very heavy, thick, PVC coated, so it's very easy to see. And you attach then a leader and tippet to the end of that. So that's going to be a tapered nylon section. So it's going to look like regular fishing, spin fishing line.
And so that's your leader.
Yep, and that's going to taper. Yeah, so it'll be thick and stiffer at the butt section. A lot of times they're 7 to 15 feet long. They'll start thick and then gradually thin out to a very fine tippet. So when you buy a new leader, it comes attached with tippet to it.
It does. Okay.
But as you change flies, as you break flies off, you're cutting back and retying. You get to the point where you're getting into the thicker butt section and you need to add more of that very thin front section to your...
That's the tippet?
That's the tippet.
The tippet. And a definition of a fly. Not a house fly that I've swatted.
That's kind of tough because
yeah,
anything
that could be a whole show, probably.
Anything that I usually count, if I can put it in a vise and tie it, I'm going to count it as a fly. Whether it's a worm that you're using Chanel for, or a microfiber mop that you're cutting off sections to imitate crane fly larva, all the way to, you know, dry fly hackle and feathers and fur and that kind of thing. So it's tough. Anything that you can throw with a, any kind of a lure you can throw with a fly rod, I would consider that a fly.
All right. Well, we've gone through the equipment. We've got everything to go catch a fish. Let's go ahead, take a chance to listen to our sponsor here. And when we come back, we can talk about techniques to put this equipment to use.
Professional Pride Realty is a proud sponsor of Northfield Outdoors on 95 The One. Let the staff and realtors at Professional Pride help you make coming indoors from the outdoors a welcoming experience in a home that's right for you. The realtors at Professional Pride are local and know the Northfield market. Whether it's buying your first home, upgrading from your current home, or purchasing your own slice of the outdoors, let Professional Pride help you every step of the way. To learn more, check them out on Facebook or at ProfessionalPrideRealty.com. Keep enjoying the outdoors and let Professional Pride worry about your indoors.
Well, welcome back. We have been talking with Mike Callery, our local fly fishing expert here. And actually, Mike knows extremely a lot about fly fishing. He's probably the Brad Pitt in the movie. Maybe I'm not so much.
Is there room for two Brads?
Yes. But you're listening to us at KYMN 95.1, The One, in 1080 AM. And hopefully, if you aren't catching us live, you'll be listening to us on our podcast. This show will be archived out there. Mike, we had been talking a lot about equipment. Is there anything else I need to get ready to go fly fishing?
Well, I think, especially for us around here, I mean, waders are awfully nice, but I don't think that they're necessary. If you're going to be doing winter fishing and that kind of thing, yes, they are going to become necessary. But for the first couple of years I was fly fishing and trout fishing in general, I wet waded. So a pair of sandals or a pair of canvas tennis shoes work really well. You know, there's a couple of tools and stuff that I think it becomes a necessity. And, you know, there's things like nippers to cut your line, to change flies and things like that. A net is pretty important as well, although the fish probably don't need a net. They're not big enough to land in a net, but that allows you to play the fish as quick as possible, get them to the net, and then release them unharmed and not totally exhausted in that. So I like to always carry a net. You know, there's a lot of things that you can get to make your life easier, but sure, there's really not a whole lot you really, really need to get out there and get started.
And how do I learn to fly fish? How do I learn that technique of 10 and 2 o'clock back and forth and get that real... Here I'm doing hand motions on the radio.
Probably. I'm sure everybody can see it right now.
but that beauty of watching somebody doing fly fishing, how do I learn how to do that?
Well, I mean, again, there is some of the fly shops up in the cities and that are going to have some lessons in that you can take. They also, a lot of times, will, if you're interested in a fly rod and stuff and kind of curious about it, they can take you out into the parking lot and kind of go over some basics with you. But I think the real nitty-gritty comes when you just get out there and try it. I think most people, if they had a fly and a rod and were to go out to a river and spend an hour, after watching maybe even some YouTube videos, you could definitely cast well enough to catch some fish around here.
And I know, yeah, I spent about a half hour on YouTube and then an hour out at the river before, you know, you finally got that rhythm down, you got that feel down where it became a little more natural. But yeah, nowadays there's so much that you can just go online and find compared to 20 years ago where you need someone to teach you.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah. Are there different types of casting in fly fishing?
Yes.
Well, give us a little definition of those. What the different types are.
The different, I mean, there is, well, there's roll casts, which are kind of a big cast for us around here, which is basically casting where you have no room for a back cast. So most of the time when you're fly fishing, you need as much room behind you as you do in front of you so you can make your casts. There's a couple specialty casts, like a roll cast, that will allow you to use the friction on the water to load the rod, and it will allow you to throw the line without using any back cast at all. So they're good in some of these small brushy streams. And then a lot of the other casts are going to be for special situations where you're trying to reduce drag. which is most fish really don't like when they see a fly floating on top. And if your line starts to pull that fly and your fly starts to make a wake, that actually for trout and stuff will scare a lot of them and put them down, and they will stop feeding. So you're trying to eliminate that drag, they call it. And so you're doing things like reach casts. So
there's lots of different types of casts other than what I tried to do. Is just, I got to be a 10 and 2, 10 and 2, like three times, and then let it go.
We need to put a small video of you up on our Facebook page so everybody can watch you with your hand every time you explain it.
When I was out with Derek, I'd probably do it two times. By the third time, I was in some tree behind me.
Yeah.
So now I understand the need to have a lot of open space behind
yes.
me if I'm trying that cast. Okay. That sounds good.
Yeah, I definitely, with the full cast, I found myself hooking trees constantly and started working on my roll casts a lot more after that point.
Yeah, I will say, even after fishing the streams around here for 25 years or so, I still put plenty of flies in trees. So it happens to all of us.
Well, how about this question? Bait. You talked a little bit about flies. Let's make this a two-part question. Again, give us a little bit more definition of what a fly is, or how it's used, and how do I know what ones to go buy or make or even use when I get out to a lake or river?
Well, there's, a fly, for the most part, when people think of a fly, they're thinking of an insect. So they can be anything from mayflies to caddisflies that spend half their time living underwater in the stream and will emerge and turn into an adult, and a lot of times will come back to lay their eggs on the stream. It can also mean things like ants that may fall in. Grasshoppers are real fun to fish when they're on the streams. So really any kind of a bug that might fall into the river. Most people, when they think of fly fishing, they automatically picture in their mind a fly that floats on the surface. 80% of a fish's diet is underneath the water, so they're eating the nymphs and that kind of thing. And you can get really into it and try to discover exactly the life cycles of a lot of these insects, but it's really not necessary. If you've got some good patterns that are real general, they're not real specific, so they can maybe imitate. You never know what the fish are thinking. They are, it could be a mayfly larva, it could be a caddisfly pupa, it could be a crane fly. So, it's nice to pick up, especially when you're starting, some of the attractor and some of just the general generic nymph patterns and generic dry fly patterns, atoms and Griffith's gnats, and some of the nymphs like pheasant tails are real popular around here, hare's ear nymphs and stuff like that. And you can catch, again, anything from sunfish to trout on those.
Now, you say dry fly. What's the difference between a dry fly and a wet fly?
A dry fly is one that's you're gonna fish on the surface. So, sometimes certain flies, you can fish them dry, so they'll float on the surface. And sometimes they work just as well when they get waterlogged and they sink. And so once you're fishing under the surface, that would become a wet fly or a nymph. A lot of times the nymphs and the wet flies are going to be weighted, so they're going to sink to get down low, but they don't have to. Sometimes you want them to suspend just under the surface of the water when there's a lot of insects hatching. But basically the dries are going to be surface and the wets and nymphs are going to be subsurface.
Well, I'm going to go back to, again, when I went out, have gone fishing with my son. We'll pull up to the river. And it seems like it takes him 5, 10, 12 minutes before he does anything. I see him watching down, looking along the shore, and then looking in the water, maybe turning over a rock. And I ask him what he's doing and telling me on deciding what to use. What is he really, is he looking at what just hatched or what's in the river or what?
Yes, kind of both.
I mean, is that what you do? Is you take a look at the river before you decide what you're going to put on?
Yes, because if you start to see rises from fish in that, you can bet that they're taking either emerges right into the surface or dry flies on top of the surface.
Okay.
But if you have no idea what's happening in the river and you're kind of curious as to, if it's somewhere where you've never been before, a good trick is to go into some of the riffle, which are a small stream, which you would kind of consider the rapids, and start turning over some of the rocks. Most of your mayflies and caddisflies are going to live in those areas. They're going to take refuge under the rocks and that. So you can kind of gauge at the size of your fly and nymph or dry fly that you're going to be using and exactly what's out there. So if They're blue-winged olives, which is a famous small mayfly, or if they're caddisfly, which is a different insect altogether.
I always see on outdoor shows people tying their own flies, and it looks very difficult. Is it? Do you tie your own, or is it easier just to go purchase them? Is it something therapeutic about making your own?
Yeah, I actually tie my own flies, and I can have just as much fun tying flies as I can fishing. So a lot of the times, and the winter time is a great time to do it when the weather's bad and stuff like that, because I kind of get my mind back onto the river. It can be as difficult or as easy as you want it. There's a lot of flies out there that are great fish catching patterns, like a woolly bugger, that are fairly easy to tie. Usually once you start and kind of tying some of these easier bugs, you kind of get the bug yourself and want to start to kind of see what else is out there and what else you can tie. I will say you're not going to save any money tying your own flies because you end up kind of buying a little bit of this and a little bit of that and a little bit of everything. So
Mike, you and I have known each other for a while, and you've asked me when I've gotten a turkey, can I have some turkey feathers? You've asked when I've gotten a pheasant, some pheasant feathers, and ducks and duck feathers. What are you doing with those feathers? I assume it's more than making a pillow.
Yes, and I mean, I use, and especially pheasants, a lot. But mainly, when you think about feathers, you're thinking about the wing materials on a mayfly or a caddisfly. But you know, a lot of the bodies of these mayflies and things are extremely thin. So I use a lot of pheasant tail, using individual barbels to kind of tie around the hook. But
are these all mainly always dry flies in, whether they're on the surface or not necessarily?
Not necessarily, because sometimes I use them for wing cases on nymphs and that too. So I can usually find uses for any type of feathers. You know, there's certain ones that I definitely use much more of. But, you know, your feather, they're the tailing material. Most of the bodies of your flies are going to be fur, so they're going to come from things like beaver and muskrat and that kind of thing. Most of the feathers, on average, are going to be for wing and tail materials.
Do you ever use live bait?
I don't. But I do know some people that will kind of tip some of their small flies with tiny bits of worms and that kind of thing.
Now, I saw a guy fly fishing, and I swear it looked like a bobber, but not really a bobber. It was like a little orange ball on there. What was he doing?
He was nymph fishing. So in fly fishing, we don't call those bobbers. We call those strike indicators. But it
I really, just got the look from Mike. you guys.
It really is a glorified bobber. So basically, he's fishing subsurface, and he's got a nymph on, and he's letting it float through some of the current, and he's watching that.
So
watching
you,
you
use
bobber.
More to float it down versus, or is he actually watching to see if it's pulled down under?
He's watching for any movement on that strike indicator.
Oh, okay.
It also will allow you to know if you're getting deep enough, because every few casts you want to be catching the bottom. So if you can see your strike indicator is ticking along the bottom, sometimes that's, you know, then that's exactly what you want. You can also suspend nymphs from a strike indicator too. So if you're fishing over a lot of woody debris and stuff like that, and you don't want to get your fly hung up, you can kind of use that to suspend. But most of the time, the fish are down along the bottom. The current slows along the bottom, so they can hold much easier there. And you're trying to get the fly into their face.
So if you had a mayfly hatch going on, something like that, and the trout were eating those, you wouldn't pick up a dead mayfly and just put on a hook and put out there. You would use a fly that looks like that. Is that correct?
Yes.
And why?
Well, they become very picky, and they start to key in when there's a big hatch going on. So they will start to take certain stages of that insect life, and that's all they will take. So if you throw a great big huge juicy grasshopper at them, they're just going to ignore it, because they're kind of tuned into one thing. That can also be the hardest time to really be productive, because you can start to pull your hair out, because trying to figure out what cycle that they're taking, a lot of times they're taking emergers, so it's right as the insect is turning from that nymph form or the pupa into the adult, they become very vulnerable. It takes them a little bit to break out of that nymphal shuck. So sometimes, a lot of times, they're keying in on those things, and I'll try to fish a fly right under the surface at that point.
What about some of the rules here in Minnesota with fly fishing? Are there some streams that are catch and release only for trout? Are the fly fishing rules different than if I have a spin caster that I'm out there just throwing some lures out in the river?
Yeah, you know, a lot of them, they are going to be catch and release only, or not a lot of them. Certain streams are going to be catch and release only. They will be artificial lure only, so they will, you can't use any live bait. And a lot of times then they'll have barbless hook rules as well. So barbless hook, you know, is just to release and release as healthy as fish as possible and let them have a chance to go on to another day.
Speaking of rivers in Minnesota, how about around the Northfield area? Where are some good rivers that people can go start trying to fly fish and see if it's the right sport for them?
Well, we're actually in a really awesome kind of spot here in this corner of Minnesota. So we've got kind of the whole Coulee area, which is just loaded with spring creeks. It's an area that the kind of goes in the southeastern corner of Minnesota, the northeastern corner of Iowa, and the southwestern corner of Wisconsin. So we've got some rivers that run out of the into the Cannon River around here, and both the Cannon Falls and down around the Zumbro, Mazeppa areas. You get down into the Whitewater State Park areas and Forestville State Parks. Almost any of those small streams down there, even if they're not considered trout streams, are going to hold some trout. But there's even a little stream right outside of Northfield here in between Northfield and Dundas. So you can really be fishing really nice water within 20 minutes of us, and you can be fishing blue ribbon water within 45 minutes of us here.
One of your takeaways is that I don't have to just go after trout. I can go after most species we have here in the state of Minnesota, and it'll be fun.
Right, right. And, you know, a lot of times when it gets real warm in the middle of the summer, it can really stress the trout. The water doesn't hold as much oxygen. They get a lot more tired out when they're being played and landed, and sometimes they cannot recuperate. So a lot of times people will kind of shift their fishing in that middle of the summer and go for some of the things like bass and pike and even muskies and that kind of thing, and let those streams until they cool down in the fall, then come back and hit those for trout too. So, you know, we've got Cannon River and all the lakes around here. You can find fish everywhere that let you catch them on a fly rod.
Well, Mike, we are getting close to the end of our show here, but I just want to have you talk a little bit more again about, okay, I'm interested in learning how to fly fish. You don't have to be an expert. Is it just getting out there and practicing some of the basics and just having fun?
I think so. You know, and it's going to be a little, you'll get a little flustered when you're beginning. And, you know, I've been doing it for a long time, and there's days I get flustered too. But you can, like I said before, within an hour or so of just practicing, coming into it, never have cast a fly rod, I think within an hour or so, you're able to, most 90% of the people are able to cast well enough and actually be able to start fishing and catching anything from trout to panfish or muskies and northern and that kind of thing.
And we don't have to look like you and I do, similar to Brad Pitt. We can look more like Andy.
Yes.
and still
scare the fish onto the shore.
That wasn't very nice of you, was it, Andy? what did you think of that movie?
Well, I think, you know, that kind of really
didn't you get the popularity?
Yes, it really did kind of kickstart a lot of this generation's fly fishing. It became real popular right after that movie, and there's still kind of holdouts from it, but yeah, it really helped. You know, it's kind of funny because some people complain that, well, now there's just too many people fly fishing, but you know, it, you need that younger generation to kind of kind of pick it up too. So I think it did great.
All right, well, it's got me itching again. I gotta go pull out my rod, and I think next weekend I'm going to go hit the stream again.
We need a video of you, Andy, out there, because you're not going to get one of me, because I was so bad.
Well, luckily a buddy gave me a couple of rainbows that are in my freezer, so if need be, I can just put one of those on the end of the hook.
Oh, there you go. There you
we'll
go.
Take a video of it.
Uh-huh. Well, Mike, this has been great. I think we got through maybe half our questions on fly fishing. We'll have to do another one on that. But we've been talking with Mike Callery, our local fly fishing expert here in Northfield, and you've been listening to us on KYNM.
KYMN.
Yes, I better get that 1080 AM here in Northfield.
And, you know, we've gotten a lot of facts on fly fishing and information out there, but there
Not
still
all.
Is. We don't have it all, because there's still time for
Dave's Interesting Facts.
And I don't know if we'll let Mike play this. We'll see. I'm going to test Andy, because I think we'll see how well
Because
Andy's
you like me getting answers wrong, so you can laugh at me.
At the top of the hierarchy, there are really just two main types of fly fishing. What are they? And Mike said this.
It's fly fishing with dry flies.
That's one.
And wet flies.
Yes, way to go, Ed. You paid attention.
I was here the whole time.
And originally, do you know what fly fishing lines were commonly made out of? Prior to the modern era, it was all the
before nylon.
Yeah.
Tendons.
Tendons?
I don't know. I have no idea. I'm trying to think of a natural...
Silk?
That was a secondary.
After, yeah.
But here in the U.S., it was braided horsehair.
Oh, that's...
He knew it. Okay, Andy. Modern day fly fishing rods measure between what and what feet?
I'd say 5 feet on the low end.
That's the lower end.
And 12?
Well, I'm saying 11. What do you say, Mike?
Well, it depends. You know, there's kind of some new thoughts on fly fishing. So a lot of people are doing what they call Euro nymph fishing. So they're using very long rods. Their fly rod is never coming out of their guide. So they're basically just fishing their leaders and using very long rods. It's a very effective form to fish. You're strictly doing nymph fishing at that point, no dry fly. But they're a longer rod. So I have an 11-footer and a 10.5 that I use quite often. That's about as long as I get. But I know there's some two-handed spay rods and that get to be...
Because this was an interesting one when I looked up. The pat answer that most people gave when I was looking at this was 7 to 11, and then there were some saying as small as 5. And then, Mike, what you were saying, and the modern day, we seem to be getting people past 11 feet. And so...
Yes.
So I'm not that wrong.
Yeah, you could say that.
I know you won't say I'm right, but at least you can say I'm not that wrong.
And lastly... Let's talk about the different types of flies. Can you name like 6 of them?
A woolly bugger.
No, I'm talking at a higher level, you know, categories of different flies. We'll start out, you got your dry and your wet. But under that, there's typically 4 other...
Your nymphs?
That is one, yes.
Yes, yeah.
Very good.
Your... I got nothing.
Any other spots?
Well, streamers.
Yes, yes.
There's wet flies, there's nymphs, there's streamers, there's dry flies, maybe terrestrials. I don't know.
Terrestrials would be another main class. So one other big main class that people refer to. They call it bucktails.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe you could argue that, but I'm going based upon west of the Mississippi, what they were saying are the main categories of flies.
Fair enough.
Hey, thanks again, Mike. This is a lot of information there.
Yeah, another great show. We'd like to remind you, as always, to tune in next Saturday to On Tap with Corey and Ira and find out more about beer. It's always good to find out about beer. As always, the show will be archived on kymnradio.net and found under Northfield Outdoors. Thank you to Hayes for updating the Northfield Outdoors Facebook page from the Great North. And again to Professional Pride Realty for sponsoring Northfield Outdoors. And until next time...
Hey, get out there and enjoy the outdoor, folks.
This has been Northfield Outdoors with Dave Vesladol and Andy Behem, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. Join Dave and Andy every other Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on 95 The One or streaming at kymnradio.net.